Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Thelma Narayan. Thelma Narayan is from Bangalore, India, where she is the coordinator of the community health cell. She's a physician with training in epidemiology and active in the people's health movement. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We'll just share with the audience here about you, Thelma, and about what the People's Health Movement is.
My background is started in a medical college, and my first involvement with community was through volunteering in a cyclone relief program in India as a young intern fresh out of medical college. And that brought me face to face with the problems that communities have at the ground level. That changed my whole career and brought me into community health. We then worked in a medical college for about 10 years, trying to reorient medical education so that the young doctors and nurses could meet the needs of communities wherein they worked, and not just work within a biomedical sort of frame. I think there are several groups like us within India as well as all over the world. And it was through a period of time that many of us got to know each other. Mm-hmm. And we participated in common programs, campaigns, etc. For instance, we are part of something called the All India Drug Action Network, working towards rational therapeutics and a rational drug policy for our country. We're talking about medicinal drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, actually. And this was a very important component of a rational national health policy towards which we were working. Some of us also got together and worked particularly on the issues of women and women's health. So we have a small subgroup working on women's health. We belong to other groupings called the Medico Friends Circle. And then we got together with groups in neighboring countries and across the world, because we found that the problems that many of us faced in our day-to-day life and in our day-to-day work had many similarities across the globe. And in fact, that's what brought us together in December 2000 to join together in the People's Health Movement. We have been greatly inspired by the World Health Organization's call for health for all in the year 1978, when they had the Alma-Ata conference, at which this declaration was made, committing all member governments to working towards health for all by 2000 AD, using primary health care as an approach. However, many other forces came into play soon after the declaration, which began to sort of verticalize healthcare programs. They began to increase the commodification of health. So medicine and health became a business that is bought and sold. And, people's lives and their suffering was sort of, in a way, secondary. And, it affected in our situations. Women actually were the worst affected in this whole game. I mean, the family planning program itself is one such. Family planning is a great necessity for women, but sometimes when it's done with a demographic sort of determinism, then the way the program is implemented, it really tramples upon the rights of people. The quality of care is terrible. Women have a lot of side effects because of improperly done procedures. And
say more about that, if you would. What do you mean by this is not what you said, but I had the impression it's targeting a certain population.
there were strong targets put on family planning that a family should not have more than two children, and this was to meet certain demographic needs. And to do that, a very coercive sort of program was used. So the screening, for instance, for women was inadequate. So sometimes women who may have had a health problem for which was a contraindication for them to go in for a particular surgery or to get a particular contraceptive, that was sidestepped, and women were just had to undergo sterilization. And in our country at the moment, sometimes the age of sterilization is as low as 21, 22, this is not to say that contraception and family planning is not a need of women. It is. But we feel good quality, humane care is what is required with adequate information to the concerned women, families, couples about all the consequences. Mm-hmm. So that was just one element. Our problem is that actually many of the basic determinants of health are not being taken care of. For instance, access to food, or what we call nutrition security. We have large proportions of people who are severely undernourished, and at the moment there are people who are in fact dying of hunger, while on the other hand the government has huge stocks of grain which are even being exported, so it's not a question of supply and demand. Mm-hmm. People don't have the purchasing capacity to get the to get access to the food. There's also privatization of water, by which nowadays a bottle of water costs more than a bottle of milk. Mm-hmm. And in the situation where there's so much of hunger and undernutrition, this has severe consequences.
So as most of the water isn't really a potable, okay to just drink without it being bottled water? Or is it not even available?
There is a question of lack of access to safe, potable drinking water. Bottled water is really accessible only for those who can pay. The majority of people really have to just take whatever they get. Sanitation facilities are still, they don't reach, even 50% of the population. Mm-hmm. And other environmental related issues such as pesticide contamination due to other pollutants from industries is a grave problem, and it's one that even the medical profession finds difficult to handle. Because the symptoms that that doctors face are generalized, and sometimes they may not realize that there's a particular chemical contaminant, in the water or in the soil around that region. So, but this is an increasing problem that we are facing in addition to what we already have.
And of course, it's hard to be healthy if you don't have enough to eat and you don't have clean water. These are very basic needs and have been around for a while. What are you doing about this? And it's always interesting how it goes back to politics and corporate issues of corporate control.
In fact, that's what has brought us together as the People's Health Movement. We had in December 2009 about 1,500 people from 92 countries who came together for the first People's Health Assembly, where we made commitments to work on some of these underlying determinants, including the role of corporates and, the commercialization of all these basic needs that people have. The other issue was of access to health care, with increasing costs of drugs, medicines, equipment, and medical care in general, there is less and less access. And we had people from the U.S. who were concerned about the fact that 40 million people here are uninsured in the richest country. So you can imagine what the situation is in our countries. Mm-hmm. Our health budgets are reducing every year. So access to health care in the public sector is reducing. And if health is a right, which we think it is an entitlement, it's an issue of social justice, then the role of the government or the state is extremely important, particularly for the poor, who in fact form the social majority in many parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly true that the poor form the majority of people in the world, and things there seem to be going from bad to worse here. Thelma Narayan from the People's Health Movement. You have gotten together and been with people from all over the world. Is it?
Yes, that's right. We have people from 92 countries, and we now have divided ourselves into different regional circles and country circles. And we all work on issues sometimes at our country level and globally on broader issues at where we feel it's necessary to have, you know, global solidarity. We are also working with World Health Organization and UNICEF because we feel these are the international bodies that are mandated to protect the health care, particularly of the poorest, and the health status of people across the world. And so we feel it's very important that we liaise with them and, if necessary, challenge some of their current programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering if you found them helpful, or sometimes they were doing things that you didn't approve of. How do you find those organizations, the UN and the World Health Organization?
Well, as I said, in 1978, we were very inspired by the World Health Organization's policy at that time, Health for All. But we found very soon that there were lots of other interests that were influencing the World Health Organization and their policies. And we do feel that at the moment that privatization seems to have become a global policy. And we have pharmaceutical companies and other major companies who are influencing the World Health Organization. We raise these concerns with them and in the public arena as well. For instance, if one is working on tobacco control, one needs to be a little careful when one then allies closely with pharmaceutical companies who are producing nicotine patches. We have to be very careful about conflicts of interest and see where public interest lies. Mm-hmm. And so the same applies to other major industries. And currently, actually, we also concerned about the impact of the World Trade Organization and some of their instruments, such as the trade-related intellectual property rights, which is changing the patent system for drugs, pharmaceutical drugs. And drug prices have already been increasing in the past 10 years. And after 2004, 2005, they're bound to increase even further. So effectively removing them from the reach of the majority, who are the poor. The other major program is GATT's General Agreement for Trade in Services, by which healthcare services are seen as a private sort of industry in a way. And there is more and more introduction of insurance companies and health management organizations which haven't fared too well in the countries of their origin and which actually increase healthcare costs tremendously. So there are all these new players that we now have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we can call it in the United States these days the military, industrial, prison, pharmaceutical complex. These pharmaceuticals are really, it's one of the hugest businesses in the world. And then all these international agreements, or I'm not sure you can even call them agreements sometimes, they're kind of foisted on people, on countries. But certainly it's getting further and further, making things less and less accessible to poor people, as you said. And at the same time, do you find that the health indices are going down? You did say since 78 they certainly have been. Have they been going down a lot very recently? Maybe you could talk a little bit more about the kinds of problems in India or anywhere else you want to.
Well, yes. I mean, since our independence, which was about a little over 50 years ago, there was a steady improvement in health indicators. But in the past 8-10 years, for instance, the infant mortality rate, which is a very good health indicator, has stagnated or worsened in 10 of our major states, that is states with large populations. As you know, India has a population of 1 billion. Mm-hmm. And this decline is not related to the HIV/AIDS epidemic, unlike in Africa. I mean, in Africa, life expectancy has gone down by 20 years, and mm-hmm. infant mortality rate has also, and all the other mortality rates have increased. But sometimes we tend to see AIDS as just being an infectious disease, but we have to realize that it's poverty that drives the AIDS epidemic. And so if you look beneath the surface of many infectious diseases, such as tuberculosis, you see the close links with societal relations, including poverty. Mm-hmm. So in India, we currently have about 700,000 deaths due to tuberculosis every year, which is a totally avoidable, preventable, you know, it has a very cost-effective intervention. So, but what I would like to go back to what you mentioned about the military complex. And We, in our trip in the U.S., have been extremely inspired by this spontaneous and large, widespread peace movement and the anti-war movement, which we support totally. I mean, many of us in our countries have also been having rallies, but for you all here, our governments actually are opposing the war, so it's easier for us to oppose the war. But here, people are standing up and saying that they are for peace and that war cannot solve problems, you know, of any type. And the determinants of this war don't seem to be, you know, making sense to people. So we, in the People's Health Charter that was developed at the People's Health Movement, there was a whole section on war, conflict and disaster. Unlike in 1978, where we were not, the health groups were not talking about war as a cause of ill health and disease, now we clearly recognize over the past 25 years that war, conflict play a major role, and we do need to work actively towards peace.
Yeah. They're definitely not good for anybody's health. The bombs dropping, and then there's all the infrastructure issues that we know about in Iraq, for instance, with, you know, not having water and the basic needs of life, and it's really quite terrible. So Thelma and I, and you, have you been you've been traveling around a lot in this recent times? That's how you happen to be here in California. Tell me about your travels and what you've been learning and seeing and teaching.
Yes, we are here to support the People's Health Movement in the USA. At the invitation of Hesperian Foundation here in Berkeley and Doctors for Global Health, which has a unit here as well, and groups all over the country. We have visited a series of universities such as Berkeley, UCSF, Stanford, Columbia, Harvard, and also had the opportunity to address the IMEC conference in New York. And we have also met with a variety of community groups. So there have been a series of community events. And I would say on the whole, we are overwhelmed by the amount of activity and action that's being undertaken in this country, about which many of us, in fact, may not be fully aware. And we feel the sense of solidarity with groups. We found the students extremely aware, knowledgeable, asking very sound questions, wanting to get involved, wanting to support and to strengthen the movement. And we found, when talking with community groups, that the stories that we heard from members in the community were so similar to the stories that we face. We had a healthcare worker 3 days ago in Boston who had a severe accident while on work. You know, she was helping a person with epilepsy down the steps, and he had a major fit, and they both rolled down the steps, and she had spinal injuries as well as other injuries. In the past 18 years, she's gone through 11 operations, but now with the cuts in health, and she has been helped by MassHealth, but now with the impending cuts, she fears for what's going to happen to her. How is she going to be able to afford the appliances that she needs, the drugs that she needs, the nursing that she needs at times when she is bedridden? So this sort of a person who's been on a healthcare, a permanent job, was had to leave the job. So her own social security is a matter of concern. In fact, this would not happen in India. If somebody meets with an accident on job, they retire on the job, and they'll be transferred to something that they can do. This lady is not totally incapable. She actually can do other jobs. So she could have been, you know, transferred to another post which she could handle. But we felt that story was very poignant and moving, in fact, and in fact embodies what we are fighting, working towards.
You know, I've heard people say, is this your first time in the United States? Have you been here before? You've been here before. Anyway, I've heard people here say that it's... who work with in the around the issue of homelessness, and of course we have so many homeless people here, and just no excuse for it in this richest country in the world. And I've heard Indian people say that they, if they had to be homeless, they would rather be in India. That it's easier to be homeless, although it's never or not usually people's preference, but easier in India than in the United States. You're nodding your head.
Yes, in fact, we had the opportunity to stay with a colleague of ours in the Bronx. And every day we traveled by tube in New York, and we could see the homelessness, and we could see the conditions in which young people were growing up. And I would agree that, in fact, why it is easier in India is because of the phenomenal community support that there is. We do have social stratification and a lot of problems, but in a way there's a slightly more caring community of sorts, that one can always fall back upon. Yes, we were surprised to see and to hear about the large proportion of people who, in a way, live under conditions of poverty. Like, we heard that about 29% of children go to bed not fully, with their hunger not fully satisfied, and that it's not 40 million uninsured, but 71 million who are either underinsured or uninsured, which is about one-third of the population of the richest country. The per capita spending on health here is way above anywhere else in the world. And what one gets for that spending is really not as good as it could be.
Yeah.
So the cost effectiveness, the way it's organized and managed, I think one could learn from experiences in the UK and in other, welfare states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's not any nationalized health in India, is there?
We do have a public healthcare system, which is, to be free for all. Everybody who accesses it. But in actual fact, we are the most privatized health system in the world. We have only 20% of outpatient care in the public health care system. For inpatient care, it's slightly more, maybe about 40 to 50% of inpatient care gets taken off by the public or government health care system. Mm-hmm. But paradoxically, when we have international bodies like the World Bank and others giving their policy prescriptions, there's sometimes a tendency, in the past at least, things are changing more recently, to advise countries to privatize more and to have more of public-private partnerships. Whereas, in fact, we are already the most privatized, and we've been slowly developing the public sector, in the past 50 to, 70 years. So we need to put more effort and resources into developing the public healthcare system in our country.
I'm wondering about non-allopathic methods of medicine. And certainly there must be, I know there's Ayurvedic medicine in India, and there must be many different traditions of using herbs and natural things that aren't allopathic medicine that have to come from these pharmaceutical companies. How is that going?
Yes, I'm very glad you raised that issue. It's an extremely important one. We have about three or four classical systems of indigenous medicine: Ayurveda, Yunani, Siddha, Yoga, are all methods practiced for several centuries. In fact, before modern medicine even grew. In addition to that, we have a very rich tradition of what we call local healthcare practices. So we have herbalists, people who are experts in knowing about the local herbs for specific ailments, whether it's snake bites, or bone setters who can manage fractures, scorpions, others who manage bites and stings, some who manage deliveries and problems of women. So that is a very rich tradition which unfortunately has been underutilized and undervalued to some extent. Recently, there has been recognition of the importance of these systems, and they're getting much greater importance. In the People's Health Movement and in all community health projects, we give a lot of importance to this particular sector, because one is it builds on a very rich tradition. It also gives people greater self-reliance in looking after their own health care. It reduces dependency on major pharma and other industries. And most importantly, it's effective and with sort of minimal side effects. So there's a growing recognition about these systems. Mm-hmm. In training programs that we've done with women, it's called a Women's Health Empowerment Training Program, we have taught the women simple yoga exercises. And when we evaluated the program about 2.5 years later, we found most of the women found this extremely useful in their personal lives for themselves as well as for people they worked with.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So that's true in the people's health movements in the countries all over the world. They're really stressing that kind of independence and going and really respecting and using traditional.
In fact, People's Health Movement is planning an assembly specifically for practitioners of indigenous and other systems of medicine and local health practitioners probably around December 2004 in Gunashastya Kendra, the People Health Center in Bangladesh, which hosted the first People's Health Assembly. Incidentally, it may be useful for those who would like to know that the second People's Health Assembly is slated to occur in July 2004 in Porto Alegre in Brazil. And that's something we feel everybody in the Americas, the Northern, Central and Southern American regions, should actively participate and contribute to.
Yeah, well, that would be good. I'm wondering, Thelma and Ryan, if you find that there are more women involved than men. I this is just off the top of my head, and because women care often about health.
Well, you're absolutely right. There are across the world more women than men who are actively participating in healthcare as well as in the people's health movement and are driving it forward. At the same time, we are now increasingly recognizing the role of men, and so we are also very inclusive. And even at our community work, we are now beginning to form groups of young boys and men so that their own energies could be channelized in a more constructive, positive way towards health. But yes, women have played a major role and and are still playing a major role in this movement.
And where do you go after, in an hour or something, you leave? Where are you going next?
We are leaving, in fact, tomorrow morning back to India. We've just completed almost 3 weeks with the People's Health Movement in the U.S. And the International Secretariat for the People's Health Movement has now shifted to Bangalore as of 1st of January 2003. And Dr. Ravi Narayan is the coordinator of the secretariat. So he's taking this initiative to support the movement in different parts of the globe.
And it sounds like you do, of course, there's lots of political work as well as direct health kinds of things.
Oh, yes. I mean, we have been inspired by our professor of epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene, Professor Jeffrey Rose, who told us in his book in 1992 that the major determinants of ill health are social and economic, and therefore the interventions have to be social and economic. And he ended with this line saying that medicine and politics should not and cannot be kept apart. Mm-hmm. So, there are several others before him who also said the same thing, and we do believe that it's important to work in alliance with people who are working on human rights, with those who are working on environmental justice issues, those who are working in the peace movement, those who are working on issues on economic issues, whether it's on regarding third world debt or whole range of issues concerning World Trade Organization and other treaties, or as you said, the word agreements may not be quite appropriate, but we feel that we need to have an alliance with all these groups because the work that they do has a more important effect on health than what we do in the medical field in using a biomedical approach.
Well, thank you so much for this interview. Do you have any contact information that you want to give out to the People's People for Global Health? Does that have a webpage?
The People's Health Movement has a website. It's www.phmovement.org. Hesperian Foundation in Berkeley is a group that can be contacted, and Doctors for Global Health.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much, Thelma Narayan, from the People's Health Movement and the Community Health Cell Coordinator in Bangalore, India. And thank you very much. My name's Sue Supriano.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, S-U-E-S-U-P-R-I-A-N-O.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1111. 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979. Thanks.